Hello, hockey humans of the world. Welcome to Tough Call Podcast Season 3, where I talk about all the latest hits and suspensions around the NHL. Thanks to you folks, I have over 3,000 Twitter followers and over 250 subscribers to my YouTube channel, which is where you'll find my in-depth video breakdowns of the plays I cover here on the audio podcast. Just go to YouTube and search Tough Call Channel to find me there. And to get the most out of your overall Tough Call experience, the best thing you can do is follow me everywhere you can by subscribing to the YouTube channel Tough Call and leaving comments there, following me on Twitter, at Tough Call Pod, and my other account, at NHL Call. And of course, hitting the subscribe button on this Tough Call audio podcast and giving it a 5-star rating right now. Thanks very much for the support. I don't want to take the hitting out of hockey. I want to put the hockey back in hitting. Good day, everyone. It's Josh from Tough Call here. And just before I get going on my topic for today, I'm going to tell you all a little bit about what to expect during Tough Call Season 3. Because I've gained a good number of followers since the middle of the playoffs last year and throughout the offseason. And I really want to thank you all, both old and new. It's a modest following, of course, but it's growing steadily. And what I love most is how you guys engage. You're commenting and being involved in the discussion. I know I do this show solo, but I really get a good sense I'm talking with you, not at you, and I hope you feel the same way, and I want you to keep your comments and suggestions coming. They're great stuff. And here's what's coming up in each episode. For one, I'm going to try and do this podcast a little bit more regularly this year and on a set schedule. I'll be releasing a new episode, hopefully every second Wednesday, and that will be starting October 13th. That is during week one of the NHL's regular season schedule. And what you can expect during those episodes is a lineup of all my special features. The first segment will be what I'm now calling my WTFs, or weekly total fines and suspensions recap, which is a recap of any fines or suspensions the NHL's Department of Player Safety handed out during the week, which usually make me say WTF when I announce them. And this feature also includes a comparison to all the fines and suspensions Tough Call would have given during the same time period. I generally give a lot more out and a lot longer ones. Another thing I do is called by request, and this is where you come in, because the Department of Player Safety has people watching every single minute of every single game. But me, I'm just one man with an iPhone and the Game Center app. I do watch more hockey than any person should who doesn't actually get paid to watch it, but try as I might, I still don't see everything. But I have a very helpful fan base who sends me clips or tags me in clips of controversial hits or calls or what have you, and they ask me what I think about them. And this is super, super helpful to me. It's everything I need, because the more incidents I can catalog, the more I can make a case for change. And it means more content for you, so it's win-win. And speaking of that content, for the YouTube channel, that's where I put out my videos of each individual incident, and I break them down point by point, just like the actual NHL's Department of Player Safety does. Only, I do it, of course, based on my own disciplinary system. My suspensions aren't what I think the real DOPS should do in real life. They don't really have anything to do with the current NHL. It's a system based on what I would do as the head of player safety in my own hypothetical NHL, the one I think we can get to someday following my system. The best way to get a real understanding of what it is I'm trying to do is to go to YouTube and search "What is Tough Call?" And you should find my 15-minute video that explains what I'm all about and why I'm doing it. 15 minutes is all I ask of your time. And if you like what you saw, hit the subscribe button for the Tough Call channel and share the video with your friends. And finally, I will try and end off each episode this year with a trivia question. And I'll give you until the next episode to think about it before I reveal the answer. And I will do one at the end of this show. But before that happens, I'll throw in a 10-minute rant or discussion about whatever topic I feel like talking about that week. And this week, that topic is the documentary everyone is talking about, Untold Crime and Penalties. Now I'm going to take a few minutes and talk about the documentary everyone has been talking about, Untold Crime and Penalties. It's about the Danbury Trashers of the UCHL, and it's on Netflix right now, and it's incredible. It's definitely worth watching. It's honestly one of those things that's hard to believe it's true. It's just such an incredible story. I thoroughly enjoyed this documentary, by the way. The characters are so well captured. And the craziest part of it is they aren't characters. They're real people who really went through this and really feel the way they do about it, about the aftermath and the effects of it on their life. That's the beauty of it. It's real. It's genuine. And to me, for my purposes on Tough Call, it fascinatingly sums up the two extremes of hockey culture. On the one hand, you have the one thing I hate most about hockey, which is the predetermined use of violence as a strategy. And on the other hand, it really demonstrates the beauty of hockey and all sport in general, which is the genuine love these guys have for each other after going through that experience together. The filmmakers did a great job of capturing that. Obviously, these players would have done anything for the group, each other, and in fact, they did do anything for each other. They held up their end of the bargain in spades, relationships, deep, meaningful relationships that last a lifetime. And the character traits, the human qualities you need to develop to earn them. That's what the sport is all about. That's what any sport is all about. The camaraderie, you ask anyone what they miss most about hockey or any sport, and it's not the sport, the playing of the game, that's fun, but it's being around the guys. If you can just get into that locker room atmosphere again, it's so much fun. What disturbs me, though, and it's demonstrated again very well in this documentary, is the qualities that are being valued here. Yeah, these players are willing to do what was asked of them, but the things that were asked should never have been asked of them in the first place. We're talking about a game of hockey. Asking players to be this violent, this aggressive, and this cold and calculated about it. That's the nervous part for me, is the calculation, the plan, the predetermination of it. It's obviously not about keeping the game clean. It's not about holding players accountable for things that you see happen and reacting to it. It's not about settling scores or any of that other noble stuff that people like to hide behind as why we need this in the game. It's glorified bullying. And it's still a huge problem in the game today. This documentary is from 2006-ish, but it's still a big problem today. And this documentary is about one specific team, and that team was unique, for sure, in that they did this the best. You can pull all the fun facts and nuances and great characters and all that out of this specific situation and have a lot of fun with it. This team did something special. They created something special that's obviously still worth talking about in a documentary that I watched and loved. Adding in the drama of the lives of the people involved, it makes it even more incredible. But overall, in terms of applying this logic to the sport in general, it's the idea of this type of team isn't new. What they did was a new way to do it, or the best way to do it, but the whole idea isn't a new concept. The mentality of the people involved isn't new or even rare. It's not isolated, it's not unique. The bullying mentality is the majority of people in the sport. Just not many people have the gumption to be so openly blatant about it like these people were, or have the resources to make it happen on such a grand scale like this particular team. It's easy to fall in love with. Like I said, even I enjoyed it. It's easy to get caught up in. It's entertainment. It's hockey. It's warriors battling it out on the ice. And if someone gets thumped to the point of having their face blown open, that's just one of the hazards of the game, isn't it? That's what people want to see. But it's easy to forget that the player that just got his face blown up is a guy who visits schools on his days off, a guy who supports local businesses, a guy who enjoys fishing in the summer, a guy who earlier that very evening showed up at a rink, strapped on some skates, and all he wanted to do was shoot a puck in a net. Meanwhile, on the other side of the ice is a guy who's not all that different from the guy he just beat up. Family man, stand-up guy, does volunteer work, goes camping, likes to barbecue. A guy who earlier that same evening hugged his son and showed up at a rink, strapped on some skates. The only difference is, on one side of the ice, the guy just wanted to score goals, and on the other side of the ice, this guy simply wanted to beat the absolute shit out of the first person he saw for no reason other than to set the tone for the season. I wonder, at the height of my career, I really do, when I still had a desire to get as high as I could in the game, what would I have done if an owner had asked me to jump a guy I didn't know and pummel him into oblivion? What would I have done? I've never been asked to do that because that's not my style of play. But I'm sure there were people around me that were asked to do that. And I wonder what I would have done. And this is just at the professional level for people who are trying to do it to earn a job. Sometimes, you know, it's a major junior kid who's trying to do what he thinks it takes to get to that next level. He works hard. He does the right things. He makes a team. He lives away from home now. He's got to move. He goes to a new school. He doesn't speak the language. He goes on those long, long bus rides. He's only there for the hockey. So if he doesn't have anything else going on, he hasn't made any friends yet, he doesn't speak the language, he feels a little isolated from his family, he's only there for the hockey. So he's probably going to be inclined to do anything to make the hockey work because it's the only reason he's there. Even if it means sacrificing his health because, hey, that's what they celebrate the most in the game, isn't it? That's what makes hockey hockey. You know, you could say it's a choice. He chose to go there. He knows what he signed up for. But again, this is a person trying to take that next step. Now, setting aside the absurdity of that statement at all, where do we draw the line? Because sometimes it's just a high school kid who's going to school, works three nights a week, and plays hockey once a week just to spend time with his buddies. But while he's there at the rink, he casually jumps some other teenager for a laugh. So now he's got a great hockey story to tell when he's 40, and it's good to chuckle about, and we all have those stories. Is that any different than someone doing it for the money? And sometimes it's not even for him. Sometimes it's because his coach asked him to do that, and he thinks that's the only way he'll get on the ice. He doesn't want to let his coach or his teammates down. Is that what hockey should be? Having to make that choice? We all say, yes, it's a choice. They know what they signed up for, but why should they have to choose between either beating someone up and risking their own health in the process or not playing at all? Are these the choices we really should be making these kids make? For way too many, that's the choice they're forced to make. As a junior coach, I always say I've had players that were in major junior, and I coached the junior B level, and we had players up there that they were very skilled in their youth, but when they went up there, there was a lot of skilled youth, so they were asked to do different things. And sometimes that thing was fight. And there's some people who enjoyed it, they got a thrill off it, they could do it, they could handle it. But we saw a lot of players come back home, want to play home, finish their career in a level where they're allowed to play hockey again, just enjoy the sport again, to actually use their skill and their talent and not have to beat people up. And these people are forced to make a choice. They're obviously very talented players to get up there, but now they have to give up that dream because they're not willing to sort of sell their soul a little bit and become that aggressive, angry, violent person. And like I said, for way too many kids, that's the choice they're forced to make. The number of players who quit hockey because they don't want to play hitting hockey even. They're afraid and stressed out and anxious because they see the headhunting. They see the coaches rewarding those behaviors. They see the commentators, the broadcast celebrating these heroes that give all their body up for the love of the game. And they see that there's never an empty seat in the arena when a fight breaks out, which is what this documentary shows very well. I played in that kind of league for my 3-year junior career. I survived. I thrived. I even had fun there. Those were the best years of my hockey career. But that was just what hockey was then. I didn't know it could be different. I didn't think it could be different at all. All those things that annoyed me about the game that I had to fight through, the cross-checking to the back in front of the net, all the bruises, the being rammed from behind, the spears, the number of times I was cut open for stitches, not a penalty called, the tiger bomb every day on my body, my poor trainer, having to rub my muscles free every night. The 3 major concussions I suffered. Wearing a soccer shin pad on my forearm during the playoffs to stop my arm from being broken because players repeatedly slashed it trying to take me out of the game. At some point, for me, a university student at the time, when does it become not worth it? At what point should we rethink how much we ask players of all levels to sacrifice for the game and start to demand the game be more welcoming to the players? Why are we asking these players, these kids, to choose between a life of hockey at the highest level with violence, with all that comes with it, or giving that up just because they don't want to become these aggressors, these attackers, or be the victim of it, even worse, right? They don't want to be the victim of that and have that be an actual accepted way to take them out of the game. Why aren't we forcing the game to be better? To allow for more skill. And again, I don't want to take the hitting out of hockey, but I want to put the hockey back in hitting. It is hockey. It's not street brawl with some goals being scored. It's goals being scored with a little bit of hitting thrown in. And we definitely lose sight of that. And that's what this documentary shows for me, is how you can get away with using that as a strategy to the point where even the league commissioner comes around and says, you know what, this is great for the league, it's good for promotion. Even though right at the start he was saying, do not make a mockery of the game. And to me, that's what they did. They made a mockery of the game. It was fun, it was exciting, it was entertaining, but it should be a rare case, and it's not. Hi folks, thanks for listening to Tough Call. If you're enjoying my takes on head contact and player safety, but you'd like to hear me talk about other aspects of hockey, I'd like to take just a minute and tell you about another project of mine, Bolton from Bolton. Bolton from Bolton is where I, Josh Bolton, and my brother Matt, you guessed it, Bolton, set each other up for lively hockey talk covering literally anything to do with it. It's not heavy analysis and stats, it's kitchen banter, like you do with your own family and friends. Head over to YouTube and subscribe to our Bolton from Bolton channel. That's B-O-U-L-T-O-N. Or find us on all audio formats as well. We find ourselves funny. Maybe you will too. And there's only one way to find out. See you there. And now, back to Tough Call.
Now for this episode, because I don't have any suspensions or fines to talk about,
I'm going to add in a second topic of discussion that kind of ties into the first. I'm going to look at the standard to which we hold players in other sports. When you compare what we just talked about in hockey, Novak Djokovic is a good example right now in tennis. He's taken a lot of heat for slamming his racket. And we all know Serena Williams took a lot of heat for her passion and emotion that she showed. And that gets into the whole topic of how we treat men versus women differently in professional sport. And that's all a whole other can of worms that I'm not going to open up right now. I'm going to focus on how we treat people in different sports differently. And I guess not different sports, in all other sports versus how we treat them in hockey. Like I said, Novak Djokovic was taking heat, so was Serena Williams. Recently, we also had a Cleveland Browns player, safety Ronnie Harrison. He got ejected from an NFL game for shoving a coach. Now, I know it's a coach, not a player, but that coach also shoved this player first. And in football, it's a little bit of a unique situation anywhere, where in hockey, there's boards separating the bench and everywhere from the playing surface. And in football, there isn't. So there's a lot more interaction between players on the sidelines and coaches on the sidelines. And generally, there's some little melees, but not escalating to the point of these shoves. And I think we have that because we have these rules where Ronnie Harrison was ejected for that very thing. They have a very strict standard for how players can behave on the sidelines. They're very quick to throw a penalty flag, and they're very quick to eject players when they go too far. And this is my perfect example of how when you call things tightly and set a good standard, those things seem to be eliminated. It's not like football players have any less emotion or any less passion or get any less heated than hockey players. We always say hockey's an emotional game, like that defends everything. And we always say if hockey players aren't allowed to fight, they won't have the outlet to get their emotions out. Well, these NFL players don't have an outlet. And it's a very emotional game. It's a very frustrating game at times. And yet they're able to control themselves. And when they don't, they get slammed instantly. So we hardly ever see instances of that type of thing on the sideline. They have the taunting rules as well in the NFL. If you get in a player's face and goad them into a reaction, generally they punish the person who goads the player as opposed to the person who reacts. Whereas in hockey, we always have that joke where they never call the first one, they always call the retaliation. Hockey is a sport where we just reward bullying at all turns, more so than any other sport. And we would call what we call taunting in football, what we call slamming a racket in tennis and punishing these people, that is gamesmanship in hockey. That's just emotion. That's passion. That's what we want to see. We want to see people in other people's faces, and that's just being a character and showing your personality. The person that's provoking the reaction is the legend, the funny guy, the guy we all want on our team. And the person who reacts, who gets provoked, who gets sucked into that, well, he's the fool. He shouldn't have got sucked into that. He knew what that person was doing, and he let it get under his skin. And while that's true to a certain extent, why do we let it get to that point all the time where we push people over the edge to the point of frustration? We want them to react. We get excited when they react. We hope they react to the point where there's a fight. That's how mad we want them to get. And yet, we criticize them for not being able to keep their cool when basically, we set them up for failure on purpose to watch them lose their cool. And that's part of the entertainment of the game. It's a strategy people are allowed to use where you can't use that in other sports. You know, you can talk about how, oh, well, that's just hockey. That's what makes it different on the ice. But that really does translate to off the ice. I touched on this in another episode. If we're going to promote bullying on the ice and we're going to make those guys be the heroes and we're going to talk about that being passion and that being gamesmanship and that being the attitude we want to see, it makes it a lot harder to stand up to those bullies in situations off the ice. For instance, my example was in one of my earlier episodes, you have a person who's in the dressing room and they're telling jokes and they're a bit off color, they're a little bit edgy, maybe even a little bit racist or homophobic. They start to take it too far, and people are laughing awkwardly, and some people just don't know what to do, so they're looking all over the room. And then there's the one person who says, you know what, that's a bit too far, I don't really like that. But instead of defending the person who's standing up to the one who's telling the bad jokes, people will jump up to defend the person who's telling the jokes and saying, come on, man, can't you take a joke? He didn't mean anything by it. He's just having a little fun. That's just locker room talk. And all of a sudden, guess what? The person who stood up to the bad teammate, that's the cancer in the locker room. That's the one that the coaches are going, oh boy, if he can't handle himself in this situation, the teammates aren't really gelling with him. Maybe he's the problem. When we all know who the problem is, in any other facet of society, the problem would be the bigot, the person telling the bad joke, in any workplace situation, in any at school situation, in any other place in society, that person would be the one who's getting the talking to and saying, you know what, you can't do that anymore. That's offensive. That's a problem. It's not inclusive. And yet in hockey, we still go out of our way to defend that person. So when that situation presents itself on the ice, it's fun and we all laugh and we all have a good time about it. But it, when it translates to off the ice, that's when it's a problem. And how can we possibly change the attitude of the people off the ice when on the ice they get away with it all the time? And in the environment of the hockey culture, they get away with it all the time. So once again, I think changing the game on the ice will solve all the problems on the ice, like we see in the NFL when they call the taunting, when they call that shove, when they punish Djokovic in tennis for slamming his racket. We don't see that stuff a lot. We see a lot of respect for the officials, the chair umpires. We see a lot of respect for the opponent, which we get in hockey, don't get me wrong. We see respectful things, but I'm just saying in general, we see players being punished for things that have nothing to do with the sport they are playing. And in hockey, we see players being rewarded for things that have nothing to do with the sport they are playing. I think if we can contain that on the ice better, it will change everything for the better on the ice and off. Something new this season, like I said, I'm going to try and end off with a little bit of trivia. And this question stems from a question I asked on my social media, which is, who do you think is the all-time most complete NHL player who also fought semi-regularly? That was a fun discussion. It was on my Twitter, at TuffCallPod. And there was a lot of great answers given, and it prompted a friend and former minor hockey teammate of mine, Jason Brothers, to send me a message with a question that I'm going to make today's Tough Call Trivia Question, or TCT. Who are the only two players in NHL history to tally 50 goals, 100 points, and 200 penalty minutes in the same season? I got one of these right away, and my friend got the same one right away. It was the second player that we really struggled with, and he gave me a few hints. And if it wasn't for his hints, I would never have even considered this player as one of the answers. It was a fun little trip down memory lane to think of all the players I did name and my guesses. And finally, after a bunch of hints, I got the second answer. The first one was a little bit easier to come by. Maybe you'll find the same thing. I'd love to hear what you think. Now, I'm not going to post the question or the answer anywhere. I haven't quite figured out how I'm going to do this, but I don't want someone to get the answer and give it away right away if I put a post out there and have someone respond with the correct answer, and then it's not fun for the whole week. So for now, I'm just going to ask it on the podcast, and whoever listens to this podcast will have the fun of trying to guess the trivia. If you know someone who is interested in the trivia question and they want to know where you heard it, tell them about the podcast so then they'll listen and hear it themselves every other week. And I'll just reveal the answer next episode before I ask the next question. And then you can react however you like by listening to the answer and going, hey, I was right. Or by, if you want to, lying to yourself if you were wrong and saying, oh, I was right, and bragging to your friends anyway. I don't care. Or if you're like me, saying, wow, I never would have guessed that. That's pretty interesting. So again, the question is, who are the only two players in NHL history to tally 50 goals, 100 points, and 200 penalty minutes in the same season? And by the way, that 100 points aspect is very important because there are players who had 50 goals and 200 penalty minutes in the same season but never reached the 100-point plateau. So there are only two players who have done this. So have some fun with that, and we'll check in next episode with the answer. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Tough Call Podcast. At Tough Call, I'm not trying to pick on individual teams or players. I want to make the game safer for every player on every team across the league and at every level with no player left behind. I want to cover as many incidents as possible and promote using harsher penalties and player education to meaningfully reduce instances of head contact in hockey. I already get a lot of help from people like you who send me clips or links to incidents or even just a quick tweet or something saying, hey, did you see that? Third period, Bolts-Habs game, checking from behind. Something like that. So if you're ever watching a game and you see something questionable or even a good clean check, because I want to promote those as well, send it my way. And don't forget to subscribe to the Tough Call YouTube channel. Find me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and be sure to subscribe to this podcast right now and give it a 5-star rating. Together, we can put the hockey back in hitting.